Okay, good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Welcome to Free Association. This is a Monday morning breakfast show, which is an unusual combination of circumstances for me, but I'm going to go with it. I do have a movie to play, so I'm going to play about the first 35 minutes, and then I'm going to play from 50 minutes onwards. I'm going to skip the middle part. We'll see how we get on with this. But I should be able to get the bulk of what needs to be included in. And it just cuts it down to hour and 15 minutes, which keeps it at a manageable amount of time. Well, this is Resonance Beings of Frequency. And you can find it on my Odyssey channel. I reposted it on my Odyssey channel. So the full thing is there. And the Odyssey channel is Radio Projects. Or you can look for Free Association Radio Show. Or Free Association Weekly Radio Show is the main channel that I'm using. But you'll find it there. Or you can listen here. Either way is good. So enjoy.
Fewer than 3% of all people in most of our countries were using cell phones. But you fast forward to today, when almost 100% of people are using cell phones.
By the time they're 19 or 20 years old, they will have used the phone for 10 years, and we have no idea what type of risk that's carrying.
Immersed ourselves in an ocean of electromagnetic radiation. It's all around us now. Invisible, we can't see it, but we know it's there. Every time you lift up your mobile phone, you know it's there.
It's very, very hard to turn the clock back. It's not impossible to turn the clock back, but we need to be aware of the adverse health effects so that we have the choice of taking precaution against the exposures.
At present, the World Health Organization statements regarding this are that it is real.
We were not the only cancer cluster around a foam mast. There are many cancer clusters around foam masts.
Most of the cancers which will arrive haven't arrived yet.
How could we have possibly thought putting microwaves to our brain was safe?
We just don't fully understand yet what we're doing.
We have an announcement finally on whether cell phones cause cancer.
An unknown scientist is about to make a discovery that should have changed everything. His name was Winifred Otto Schumann. On the day in question, he was teaching his students about the physics of electricity, how a sphere within a sphere can create electrical tension, and subsequently, a frequency. Schumann's class had struggled to understand the subject, so to make it easier, the professor instructed them to imagine the Earth as one sphere and and the ionosphere is another. He then asked them to calculate the tension that would exist in between. Having no idea himself, Schumann also began to calculate. Eventually, he arrived at a frequency. A frequency of approximately 10 hertz. As incredible as it seemed to Schumann, our planet had a pulse, a measurable frequency that surrounded life on Earth. Although the professor was proud of his find, he didn't see it as a hugely significant one, especially as it was only published in a small science journal, confined to the back pages, under the heading of Schumann Resonance. It would take several years, and an incredible twist of fate, before the professor would begin to realize the true importance of Schumann Resonance. That twist of fate had begun 30 years earlier, with another German scientist by the name of Hans Berger. Using an EEG machine he had built himself, Berger had made the first ever recording of electrical frequency transmitted by the human brain. It was initially suggested the wave be named after the man who discovered it, but Berger, being a modest man, elected for an alphabetical name and called it the Alpha Wave. Shortly after Professor Schumann's discovery, one of Hans Berger's colleagues, a man named Dr. Ankermüller, happened to stumble upon a bedraggled copy of a small scientific journal. The exact same small scientific journal that Professor Schumann's discovery had been published in several years before. He read the piece several times, shaking his head in disbelief. He realized instantly the magnitude of what was in front of him. The frequency of the alpha waves, recorded by Hans Berger, were almost identical to Schumann resonance. The frequency of the Earth. Dr. Ankermüller immediately contacted Schumann to convince him to investigate further. Schumann agreed and worked alongside one of his students to refine his discovery. They studied in detail how tension is discharged by lightning in the Earth ionosphere cavity. Eventually, they came up with an exact frequency. The pulse of the Earth, Schumann resonance, was exactly 7.83 hertz. The discovery was remarkable. Schumann resonance wasn't just similar to the alpha waves of the human brain. It was identical. The brain's frequency, which controlled our creativity, our performance, our stress, anxiety. And our immune system had somehow tuned in to the frequency of the planet. The pulse of the Earth had become the pulse of life itself. The frequency of a wave is measured in hertz. This refers to the number of oscillations the wave makes each second. Frequencies range from a billionth the size of an atom to the length of the universe itself. In theory, frequencies are infinite, so ultimately endless. If this was a coincidence, it was nature's most spectacular. So what did all this mean? It wasn't long before somebody tried to find out. His name was Rutger Weaver, an acclaimed scientist from the Max Planck Institute. In the early 1960s, the professor constructed an underground bunker in order to examine the circadian rhythms of man. The circadian rhythm is the day-night cycle that is engraved into all life. Over a 30-year period, the professor conducted experiments in which student volunteers would spend several weeks at a time living in the bunker, completely shielded from the natural resonances of the Earth. In his results, Weaver noted some astonishing findings. He discovered that when Schumann residence was filtered out of the bunker, the students' physical and mental health would suffer.
He took students down there. He didn't trust to do it with ill or old people. He took young students down there because he knew, Weaver knew, that there would be an effect. So obviously underground, you don't have Schumann resonance. You only have the transverse magnetic fields from in the earth. So by putting them underground, they started feeling sick, having headaches. Their circadian rhythm was completely upset. The interesting thing was, when he just introduced the 7.8 hertz frequency with a magnetic pulse generator, that immediately stopped.
Weaver would secretly introduce the 7.83 frequency to the bunker via a man-made transmitter. Each time he did so, he noted the ill effects suffered by the volunteers either disappeared or decreased. Their stress, headaches, and emotional distress was reduced, and their sense of well-being was restored. All by the introduction of Schumann resonance. Weaver's research had revealed an incredible connection between human health and the natural frequency of the planet. And in 2011, groundbreaking research suggested something even more impressive, that Schumann resonance could be connected to the beginnings of life itself. The breakthrough came at the hands of Luc Montagnier, the Nobel Prize-winning scientist who first discovered the HIV virus. The professor was conducting water memory experiments, examining how water could retain a memory of substances that had previously been dissolved in it, when he stumbled upon something that would challenge the very principles of science. All life comes from life. This is a fundamental principle of science, and one which has never been violated in any experiment. Life can only exist where life has existed before. And the mechanism for this has always been understood to be a material one, such as egg and sperm, or spore and cell division. But Luc Montagnier's experiments have offered a very different hypothesis. The professor showed that DNA sequences, the very building blocks of life, communicate with each other in water by emitting low-frequency electromagnetic waves. Even when the DNA was kept in separate test tubes, the professor still recorded electromagnetic communication between them. How sophisticated could this communication be? Well, Luc Montagnier showed they are able to organize nucleotides, the ingredients which actually make up DNA, into brand new DNA. Science has combined these ingredients countless times before, but in no experiment have they ever been able to recreate the spark of life and transform nucleotides into actual DNA, not without DNA already being present. Life, after all, can only exist where life has existed before. But in Luc Montagnier's experiments, the DNA had been completely filtered from the water. Yet new DNA was still formed. Just how was this possible? How had Luc Montagnier managed to achieve what no other scientist could, and create life where no life was present? What was so different about Luc Montagnier's experiments? There was the presence of a frequency which, when removed, would cause the experiments to fail, but when present, would ensure that they would succeed. That frequency was 7.83 hertz, Schumann resonance. A delicate relationship had been struck between life and the frequency of the planet, an interaction of living organisms and electromagnetic frequencies, a reliance, a bond. Evidence of this can be found by reading the science papers, but more obvious proof can be found by simply walking outside. How did all this happen? Well, when you look at the history of the Earth, it seems pretty obvious. Human waves have been part of this planet since the very beginning. Life evolves surrounded by them. And inevitably, tuned in. In fact, our sensitivity to frequency became deeply connected to our ability to sense another of the planet's phenomena. Billion years ago, magnetotatic bacteria formed a simple but intriguing relationship with the Earth's magnetic fields. The single-celled organism contained particles of magnetic material. This enabled it to act like the needle of a compass and orient along the magnetic lines of the Earth. As organisms became more complex, so did their reliance on the Earth's magnetic fields.
We do know that bees are sensitive to magnetic fields. We know that within their bodies they contain particles of magnetite, and laboratory studies have shown that they are indeed sensitive to magnetic fields. And you can demonstrate in the laboratory that if you artificially create a magnetic field, you can control the way that they build their comb. And it seems logical that bees are using magnetic fields in navigation.
The delicate balance of life on Earth is perfectly illustrated by reliance on bees and their pollination of plants. It's hypothesized that without bees, life wouldn't stand much of a chance.
Insect pollination is needed for really all the things that make eating interesting. So all the fruits, the nuts, things like that all require insect pollination, and bees are the most important group of pollinators.
We'd have a very boring diet.
Yes, we would have a very thin existence. I think that's the point without bees. And of course, as well as the food that we need to eat, they're pollinating wild plants as well. And in many cases, we don't know details about the pollination of wild plants, but we can be sure that without bees to pollinate, then many of our wild plants would disappear.
Marianne Frazier, the Senior Extension Associate for Beekeeping at Pennsylvania State University. What are the classic criteria of colony collapse disorder so that any beekeeper can go out there and look at their bees and say, this looks like a pretty classic case of this?
The symptoms are that the bees are relatively healthy and strong, and in a very short period of time, the adult bee population disappears from the colony. It leaves the colony, and what it leaves behind is a lot of brood, meaning the young bees, honey, and pollen.
On what continents has this colony collapse disorder been observed?
Well, the decline of honeybees has occurred actually worldwide. We've seen many other countries report declines in honeybees. Whether or not it's truly due to this thing called colony collapse disorder, which is a pretty unique set of criteria, is another question. And that's one of the things we're trying to understand by trying to communicate with other people in other parts of the world.
The sort of current concern particularly dates from about 2006, and particularly in the United States, where a lot of commercial beekeepers suddenly found that their bees had been healthy at one point in the year and then in late summer just suffered these spectacular losses. And they appeared to be different from anything that had been seen before. So people were just going to their hives and finding there were no bees at all.
colony collapse disorder has affected hives all around the world, with some countries reporting losses of up to 70%. A variety of reasons have been offered as to its cause, but none of them have been able to conclusively explain why all of a sudden bees don't return to their hives. Apart from one, a sensational piece of research by Joseph Kuhn and his team. In an experiment, the doctor worked with 8 beehives and placed a regular home deck phone inside half of them. The scientists then monitored if the presence of a deck phone would affect the way that bees returned to their hive. The results were astonishing. In the hives where no deck phone was present, the bees returned at a normal rate. But in the hives which contained a deck phone, the bees hardly returned at all. In one hive containing a deck phone, not a single bee returned. To fully understand the relevance of Dr. Kuhn's experiment, we must first understand how a deck phone works. The reason you are able to walk around your home talking on your deck phone is because the base station of the deck phone sends electromagnetic frequency waves, called microwaves, to the handset. This is exactly the same way that a mobile phone mast communicates with a mobile phone. A deck phone is basically a miniature version of a mobile phone mast. If a bee is affected by what comes out of a deck phone, it will most definitely be affected by what comes out of a mobile phone mast. And with 4 billion mobile phone users around the world, all of a sudden, there are an awful lot of mobile phone masts. The bee's magnetic sense allows it to navigate using the magnetic lines of the Earth, an ability it has spent millions of years fine-tuning and developing. Does it stand to reason, then, that such an acute sensitivity would be affected by even the slightest change in the electromagnetic environment? So what about a gargantuan change, and one which has happened almost overnight? Are there other species that have this sensitivity to magnetic fields? A sensitivity which ultimately makes them vulnerable to man-made frequencies. Unfortunately, the discovery of a new protein cell called a cryptochrome suggests all life has a magnetic sense.
They were discovered in the 1990s in plants where their function is to absorb blue light, which is used to regulate growth. They were since been found in insects, animals, mammals, including humans, and in birds. Cryptochromes are a biological molecule called a protein. It's generated by some of your genes called trigenes, and the cryptochrome molecule actually controls your circadian rhythms, including melatonin production. Some of the cryptochromes seem to have a function of absorbing light as detectors for the circadian clock. So they are inputs for the light-dark cycle that many species seem to have, plants as well as animals.
But in the year 2000, Thorsten Ritz demonstrated an even more amazing role for the cryptochrome. In a series of experiments on robins, he demonstrated that their navigational sense was not only a magnetic one, but it came directly from the cryptochrome cells, which are located behind the eye.
I think the Ritz paper published in 2000 is one of those milestones in science, because he proposed that this cryptochrome molecule, which remember is best known for its effect in controlling circadian rhythms, that molecule was actually responsible for giving the compass, magnetic compass information in birds, the birds literally see the Earth's magnetic field, perhaps as a bright or dark spot superimposed on their field of vision. And as they then move their head or their body around, this spot moves, and so rather like a heads-up display for a fighter pilot, they have this thing that they see, goodness knows what it would be, which allows them to orient while they're flying. The way he tested that was to expose birds to radio frequency fields to see if it actually disturbed their magnetic compass. And not only did the radio frequency field indeed disrupt the migration of robins, but it did so at very, very low intensities of fields. And that's really important and really interesting, that very low level radio frequency fields interfered with the robin's compass.
The experiments by Ritz clearly demonstrated that the cryptochrome cell used in navigation was seriously affected by man-made frequencies. And man-made frequencies at levels well below those deemed safe by the governing body, ICNIRP.
All of the animal navigation studies, the cockroaches, the zebra finches, the chickens, the robins, they all have their magnetic compass disturbed by radio frequency fields well below the ICNIRP public exposure limit.
Like work on birds, particularly birds, and insects, have shown that they are sensitive to fields way below the ICNIRP levels that claim are safe for us. If you look at where the research shows they're sensitive to, there's good stuff in the literature showing it's significantly lower than what we're allowed to be exposed to, and therefore what they're exposed to in the environment.
There's certainly solid scientific reason for supposing that magnetic fields, artificial magnetic fields, will disturb the habitat of a number of species.
Because of electromagnetic fields.
Over the last 25 years, it's changed beyond recognition, just beyond recognition. It's millions and millions of times in terms of electromagnetic energy.
The former National Radiological Protection Board, in one of their documents, said that they thought that the radiation environment, if you like to call it that, had increased many millions of times from what it was 50 years ago. Many millions of times.
It's an enormous change in environment on Earth, and it completely swamps all these natural signals, including the Schumann waves that we have evolved with.
One of the reasons that cryptochromes are particularly interesting from the point of view of human beings detecting magnetic fields is that there's a recently study by Dr. Foley and colleagues showing that if you put human cryptochromes into the fruit fly, then the fruit fly is magnetically sensitive because of the presence of these human cryptochromes. So this is actually showing that human cryptochromes are magnetically sensitive, actually detect magnetic fields.
the discovery of the cryptochrome cell has sparked new interest in the magnetic sense of man, a sense that Robin Baker had predicted some 40 years ago.
This is not some kind of scientific blind man's buff. It's an experiment to find out whether children have a sense of direction. Blindfolded and earmuffed, the subject is turned around in a special chair until he can't remember which direction he's facing. The chair stops, and the subject guesses whether he's facing east, west, north, or south.
West.
The guess is recorded in a small computer. If children had no sense of direction, their guesses would be random. But they're not. Children after the age of about 10 or 11 make pretty good guesses. It seems they have a real sense of direction. And it seems to be a magnetic sense. When the scientists strap a magnet to the subject's head, it disrupts his sense of direction severely.
And this is a huge advance in understanding. It begs all sorts of questions. It begs questions as to whether human beings can actually navigate in the Earth's magnetic field. Even though they don't do it today, did they do it thousands of years ago? And of course it begs the question as to whether this is a process by which magnetic fields are actually detected in the human body, which leads to this disturbance of circadian rhythms, which would explain all these adverse health effects that we see so much of in the epidemiological studies of the health of magnetic fields.
If mankind has the ability to sense magnetic fields, the same ability as the bees, the birds, and the butterflies, does that also mean that we are as vulnerable as they are to man-made frequencies? Will changes in our environment affect us, as it's clearly affecting them?
Roland? Okay, so how to describe electrosensitivity?
Electrical sensitivity is when people start reacting, their body starts reacting to electromagnetic fields. Generally speaking, the electromagnetic fields that they'll be reacting to is wireless. So it'll be wireless communications, it'll be Wi-Fi, it'll be cordless phones, deck phones, mobile phones, masts. All of them emitting signals that our body has never experienced before. And when people start to become affected, when I became affected, the way that it starts to affect you is, generally speaking, it's your head first, and it will start giving you pains in your head. But I hate to use the word headache, because it's pains in your head that is unlike any other headache you've ever had before.
Most people's complaints are things like cardiac arrhythmia, insomnia, headache, visual disturbance, vertigo, different kinds of paresthesias or neurosthesias where they are feeling unusual sensations within their body. But really, it can also affect endocrine function, thyroid function. Again, the list is really endless.
In my particular case, and this is not everybody's case, if I then don't get out of the environment, I start getting quite severe pains in my gut, and that will then mean it's too late, and I will then start bleeding internally.
I think that the symptoms are so diverse, and the associations that that people make are very difficult to accept if you have no knowledge of this subject, which most physicians do not have, and that's no fault of their own. We're not trained to recognize this condition. It's very innovative, and our understanding of it is entirely embryonic at this stage. We're at the very first steps of unraveling and fully understanding this condition.
Brian, like many sufferers of electrosensitivity, has been forced to make radical changes to his home.
Area, these two rooms have been completely shielded in metal foil, so that this room and the bedroom are a Faraday cage. And if you actually check the electromagnetic fields or indeed the microwaves. And this machine is simply converting microwaves to noise. You find that the mass that is about half a mile away over there, which causes me a problem, by shielding the room and putting metallized glass, means that I can eliminate most of the electromagnetic fields.
The aspects of an organism that allow it to detect and respond to electromagnetic fields, you could say, this word's going to use in a number of different contexts, and if you bisect it and break it down, electrically sensitive, you could say that really that's a response to life itself. In that, for example, if we're looking at an organism to determine the presence of life, we're really looking for the presence of electricity. So with the electrocardiogram, for example, the ECG, and the electroencephalogram, the EEG, what we're looking at there is the presence of electricity from those target organs, the brain and the heart. And when we see the presence of that, that's a sign that there's life. So in a way, given that on a cellular level, electromagnetic fields are part of life itself, we can say that all life is electromagnetically sensitive.
Desperate to convince people that electrosensitivity was genuine. Brian.
Okay, I'm going to stop there and put the next part in a separate podcast, just because it's easier to manage that way. But we've got to a place where all life is electrical. So that links, from that point, it links the effects of cell phones and cell phone towers. It links the body's pH. It links effects on the endocrine system. And it links into the electric universe theory, which is something else that I like. And then we start thinking about Royal Rife and Nikola Tesla and people like that. But I'm going to leave it there for the time being and just see where the second half takes me. I'm going to have a break and then finish this off with two more sections, I think. So there'll be another 25 minutes and then another half an hour section.